Off the Ball Rugby.
Like him or loathe him, he's been great for the game. He brings in energy and I couldn't believe it. On Saturday night I came home, my son was wearing all white and he had like tape, like a Pollock hat around his legs. I was like, what's happening here?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Here it comes, opportunity, O'Reilly! The League of Ireland is back this Friday night on Off the Ball, whatever the weather.
Can you believe it?
A team of distinction and real big spenders, Derry City host Bohemians after their 4-goal haul last weekend.
An instant response from Derry City.
Can City get off to a good start for a change, or will Bohs get that loving Whelan?
Back pass here, Colin Whelan has scored for Bohemians.
There's sure to be fireworks on Foyle side. Join us on Off the Ball this Friday from 7pm on News Talk or the Goal Out app for live and exclusive commentary of Derry City versus Bohemians.
A beautiful finish.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
You're listening to Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Yeah!
Seven minutes past eight on Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast with myself and Keith Tracy. Owen Heary is with us. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning. How are you?
Keeping well. We were chatting about, I don't know how we came up, unnecessary skills.
Unnecessary skills.
We were originally talking about the greatest two-footed players that we've ever seen, and it led into a conversation on skill. Joey Undoe naturally came up. You've obviously seen him up close.
Absolutely unbelievable. But I was listening to Keith saying that, you know, if you have to use skill to get out of trouble all the time, then you're probably doing something wrong. And Killian Brennan would come to mind with me, because every time I tried to tackle him, he let the ball go and I could never get near him to give him the kick.
It's the most frustrating thing ever,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is. And you just get there and you say, I'm going to, you know, leave one on him. Couldn't get near him, just popped the ball up. And you're like, right, next time, just kept doing it. But Joe had tricks to beat the band. Like, and as I said, when you come on, he was one of them players that you like, give him the ball, let him do his stuff. Like him, Wes Houlihan, just let him do that stuff.
Mm. Did managers ever get frustrated?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time. I remember Pat was giving a team talk and he probably gave the best team talk he ever gave in his life, and he looked around at Joseph and he was asleep in the dressing room and Pat's like, "Jeez, you for real?" You know, he's having a pop then at Joseph, and Joseph goes out and scores a hat trick. You know, that was the player he was. He goes, I know, Pat, I know. I was shaking his head, yeah, and just turned it on, you know. So those are the players that the likes of Tony Sheridan, the likes of Joe and Doe, Wezzo, had so much skill, so much ability that you just let them play off the cuff because that's how good they are.
It's kind of like Cantona thing, isn't it? Ferguson just leaving him alone in the dressing room. There's no need to talk to some of the lads in the dressing room.
No, that's it. And, you know, you get the walkers playing and the players walking, and we were doing all the donkey walking. Just let them go and do their thing, because, you know, they're going to create something, or they're going to score a goal, or, you know, a game that's tight, they're the ones that change the games for you.
Game needs those personalities, doesn't it? The likes of Joey and Doe.
Yeah, I remember Mark Hughes giving out to Tugoi about his running stats, and Tugoi said back to him, there's people that carry the bricks, Gaffer, and there's people that lay the bricks. I lay the bricks.
Great answer.
Brilliant answer, isn't it?
Jesus, yeah. Unreal.
Little snotty nose me behind him going, I'll use that one in the future as well.
Yeah. Who's on. Yeah, brilliant. Have you seen any unbelievable two-footed players
lately?
No, not really, but
I remember like the likes of Stewie Bone could play with 2 feet. He could take a penalty with his left foot, penalty with his right foot.
Mad, isn't it?
Put it in and not a bother to him. But I remember when growing up and Stewie had a tyre, like, you know, hanging out of a goalpost, and he'd be hitting it with his left foot through the tyre and right foot through it. And
really?
Just ability was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like when you hear Kevin Keegan, you know, juggling with the tennis ball as a kid, and just some of the effort that some of these players go to for to increase their skill level is insane, the hours that you put in.
Is being two-footed a street footballer thing?
Quite possibly, yeah. Well, I know when I'm going to kick with my left foot, I was concentrating as hard as possible on the ball to make sure I got a bit of connection where the wears these fellas are still so natural. Like, it's, yeah, maybe it could be a street footballer, but we all grew up in the streets. Are you two-footed?
Yeah, well, I give it a smack with the right foot, but I used to love just bouncing a ball off a wall, and how it came to me, I try and deal with it. I hated running around with the ball to try and control it with my left foot. It just didn't feel right to me. So although it would bounce off my shin every now and then, I think I have to get better at this and get better. And I was saying to the lads, when the opposition manager is shouting, he has no right foot.
Burned
a hole in me. You won't shout
keep
that again.
His left, keep him on his left, keep on his right. He was doing the control off the wall, where I was doing 50-50 tackles for a ball, building my leg up.
It fascinates me though how, like, you see some professional footballers now who can't kick with the other foot. Like, even when I was a kid, I remember my dad, and I only played football to a junior level, but like, he would make me go around the cones with my left foot just to improve it, like, every evening. And to think that there are professional footballers who aren't putting the hours in and the work in.
Do you know who does it an awful lot? And this is not me having a stab at him, Mohamed Salah. If he goes around the outside on the right wing, he won't cross with his right foot. He'll cross with the outside of his left.
Yeah.
And it's baffling to me.
It's too predictable.
It's just, all you have to do is let the ball come across your body and dink it. It's not the most difficult skill in the world. You just have to, a little fake, let the ball roll and put it into a decent area.
Yeah.
But to think, the amount of times he does it with the outside of the left, you think, oh, what a ball. You think, yeah, great ball, but do what you're right.
The other side of that is, you look at, like some Maradona, one-footed.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you mentioned Messi earlier as well.
Yeah. Like best players in the world, and they just constantly walk on their strong foot and keep doing the same things, and we rate them so highly.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be two-footed in the game to be rated so highly in a World Cup or in any sort of game.
Yeah, it's true. Lads, League of Ireland, we have some really interesting games to look forward to across tonight. Derry City Bohemians is the live game, and Off the Ball and News Talk tonight, 7 p.m. is the show start time, 7:45 p.m. of course, the kick-off time, the Ryan McBride Brandywell. We've had a couple of postponements the last couple of weeks for our commentary game, so thankfully up in Derry that won't be an issue with the pitch up there. Shelburne against Galway United, Talca Park, 7:45 p.m. this evening. Waterford versus Sligo Rovers at the RSC. Louth Derby, Dundalk against Drogheda from 8 p.m. at Oriel Park tonight. You're going to be at that game, Keith, I know. Mm-hmm. And Shamrock Rovers against Pats in Tala at 8 p.m. I mean, a couple of interesting ones to look here at, lads. Maybe we might start with the live game and Off the Ball and News Talk tonight, the Derry City Bows game. Bows will be flying high after last week, and obviously that brilliant hat-trick from Cullum Whelan in Sligo has just kick-started them nicely.
Yeah, I think great performance last week. Got 4 goals away from home. Whelan getting a hat-trick, playing 2 up top, makes a big difference, yeah. I think, the Bows as well. Mm. We'll be seeing, you know, hopefully Whelan can kick on. He got a hat-trick this sort of early stage last year against Waterford and didn't happen for him. So you're hoping that he keeps 2 up top and gives them support up there, then continue on. You know, I like the setup of the team. I think Todd coming in at the back, Sam Todd and Hickey coming in at the back makes a big difference for them. You know, haven't conceded yet, so they're solid, more solid at the back, power on the right. Midfield, we know they have a great midfield going forward. Defensively, at least the lads at the back gives them a little bit more defensive cover. But the two up top, I think, makes a big difference for them.
Did Hickey surprise you playing as a centre half instead of in the 10 or the striker, or wherever else he can go?
Talking to players and talking to the staff sort of in the off season, and that's where they were playing them up front and centre half. So I think they've seen, you know, they need to, I suppose, you think of the amount of goals they conceded last year, you know, when they were going 1-0 up and then you could see 2 goals quickly, whereas they need to, you know, Cornwall got, they need an experienced player in there, and they have 2 experienced players, which makes a massive difference, you know, in terms of the midfield being able to push forward more. So I think, yeah, Hickey, like that, you can throw maybe one of the younger players in there come during the season and throw Hickey up front if you're looking for a goal. But I think at the moment, centre-half is perfect for him. And I also think the young lad, Harry Vaughan, he looks like a good player.
Yeah.
I know he didn't start last week, but watched him against Pats in the Aviva, and he looks like a very, very good player.
And Derry have obviously drafted in a goalkeeper as well. So Brian Maher injured his hand against before the draw with Dundalk last week, but they could have a new goalkeeper. The loan signing of Eddie Beach from Kilmarnock, who has joined after this, came through the academy system at Southampton and Chelsea. So that could be an interesting. Like they've really strengthened having the Derry since last season. Obviously James McLean being the standout one, but when you think of all the new players they have, and then the atmosphere up in the Ryan McBride Brandywell, it's always hostile, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, I think with Derry, like, it's probably finding the right players in the right formation for them at the moment. I think Clark is a better 10. I think McLean is better out on the wing, like, you know. So at the moment, you're looking at him sitting as a midfield. Is he given the same amount? I know Roddy came out and said he's too old and things. Roddy said the same about me when I signed my Bows. I'm being honest. And I went on and we won 5 trophies. So, but I think he's a better, probably more attacking player if he's played higher up the pitch. Clark, much better if he plays more inside than as a winger. But I think Pat McLean's a good sign for them as well, like, you know, centre-half, especially after losing Todd and that. So I think Derry will be thereabouts at the end, but at the moment they're conceding goals and it's something that they need to tighten up on, you know, especially you see the one last week, quick throw in. They have defenders in place to cover it and they still allow the goal to go in. So, but they're scoring late goals, which is a plus as well for them. So, yeah, it'd be a good game. I think it'd be a real battle up there for them.
Yeah, big time. Shamrock Rovers, Pats. It's kind of, we don't know where we're at with either of these teams, obviously, because Shamrock Rovers have been so unlucky with the weather, and Pats also sat out last weekend after the weather cancellations, and then had that very drab 0-0 against Bows, obviously the Aviva, so it was hard to make out much. But these teams will be very, very keen to to get going very, very early in this division.
Yeah, definitely. I think Jake Mulroney, you know, has been his first game for Rovers is against his old club. But I think with Jake Mulroney, if he has a good defender behind him and you allow him to play further up the field, he'll really give you, you know, he'll get you goals, he'll get at players. We said it against Pats last year, they were so open and he stepped forward a lot that he were caught out. Whereas I think Rovers have a better back four, better back five, if you want to say, at times, and it might allow him to play further up the field. And, you know, I think he'd be definitely one to watch this season.
You're still all aboard Rovers as the clear favourites?
Yeah.
Just ahead of Derry?
Yeah, well, I think a good bit ahead of Derry now, from what I've seen. I know it's still very early stages, but like I'm not looking for the complete performance from a Derry point of view. I'm looking for a bit of intensity off the ball and that bite and some doggedness that I assume Jase McLean would bring into the centre of the park. But, I mean, I was scrambling. The game got called off in Tallaght and I had to go up to Derry on the opening game. And I thought, you know, the atmosphere was building at 7 o'clock, the crowd were coming in, the music gets going, you're thinking, Derry will just deal with Sligo, they've way too much here. But Sligo were brilliant in the opening couple of minutes, and over the first two games, Sligo have gone to the Brandywell and Dundalk have gone to the Brandywell and looked really comfortable for large periods of the game on the ball, which for me shouldn't happen. But look, I don't know whether Tiernan Lynch is probably, I know it's 4 points, it could have been 6 on the board. Is it better going about it like this in the early stages of the season? And what I mean by that, if Derry had won both games 4-0, we're sitting here thinking they're going to win the league and there's all sorts of pressure ramping up. Maybe just going under the radar and not stinking the house out, but being a little bit disjointed, possibly a little bit better to go. But Shamrock Rovers players will be licking their lips thinking, like, there's not too much there from a Derry point of view.
Mm. Does any tiredness kick in? Like, you know, when you see the amount of games that the Shamrock Rovers players have had to play because of European football, can that have a delayed reaction, like at some point early this season or even in the middle of the season or tail end, it just kicks in where the lack of a break or a proper break just has an impact?
It could. This is the...
That's where squad depth comes in, I suppose,
squad
as well.
Depth, they've got squad depth, but yeah, I would think that's what all the other teams in the League of Ireland would be thinking. Look, they're going to have so many games this season, they could get tired. If we can run all over Shamrock Rovers, we can do it. But Rovers are so good at keeping the ball that when you try and, you know, hurt them in terms of running, that they have the ball, it's so difficult to do it. But yeah, I still think Shamrock Rovers are the best on paper. On paper, Derry have got close, but what I'm seeing in terms of performances, there's still a bit of a gap there. And I fully understand that Shamrock Rovers haven't kicked the ball yet this season, which is crazy. You know, they probably got better and they haven't played yet.
Yeah, it's true. The Louth Derby, you've played in this one, Keith, as well.
Oh, jeez.
Dundalk against Drogheda United. A welcome return to the calendar, though, I think, to see this derby and the newly laid Oriel Park surface as well. A lot of distractions off the pitch for Drogheda United during the week as well with the whole board situation. But it's good to see Premier Division football back in Oriel Park, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. As you say, Dundalk out of the league for a while and they were league champions for a long time. Them and Cork were always competing. And now they disappeared for a bit, but they're back. And, you know, we've seen last week against Derry, and I thought they were very unlucky not to come away. Yeah. There's 3 points up there. And now you have Drogheda, who are firing on all cylinders. You know, I think Drogheda have well set up, well tuned in team, playoff set pieces, long throw ins, whether it's corners, free kicks, but he can also play a bit of ball as well. And I think Kevin has done a great job there. And, you know, 6 points, 2 clean sheets, couldn't ask for a better start in the season. Dundalk, as I say, one game called off, and then getting a point away to Derry. You know, they'd be fancying their chances as well at home. It'd be a big crowd there, and as you say, it's a little derby. And hopefully we're talking about football after the game rather than talking about what's happening off field as well.
New floodlights as well at Oriel Park, as well as the new pitch, in fairness.
So a chance now with less than 2 minutes to go. Kempers versus Shelton.
Mario Kempes, the star of Argentina's first World Cup triumph in 1978, scored a whopping 303 goals over the course of his career, which included spells at Valencia, Rosario Central, River Plate and Instituto. But what if his career had taken a different path and ended up at Spurs? Well, just years after helping his nation win their first World Cup, he nearly joined his fellow countrymen in Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa at the North London club. But why didn't the deal get over the line? Well, in episode 4 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors, Richie explains why the transfer didn't come to fruition for one of the best strikers in the world of the 70s and 80s. Find this week's episode in your OTB Football podcast feed for free each and every Monday. You can also go back and listen to the other episodes in this series, focusing on Michael Laudrup, Pelé and Ronaldo. Subscribe in your OTB Football podcast feed now.
Like, what's the ceiling for Drogheda? Like, nobody really talks about them as serious contenders. Obviously, European football would be absolutely fine, but like, there's no, what is the ceiling?
Honestly, they probably don't want to hear this, but I think staying in the league has to be the forefront of everybody's mind. That's the requirement. Anything after that is an absolute bonus, but what Kevin has done with this draw of the team has been unbelievable. I really enjoy watching them play. How they go about it, I think any opposition that plays against them will come off the pitch knowing they've had a game of football, which should always be the number one requirement. But when they play a back five, Keeley, Bulger and Burney, very difficult to break down. And when they win it back, they've got Shane Farrell, they've got Brandon Kavanagh and they've got Ethan O'Brien. All three of them are very capable of hitting a pass in behind. And the pass in behind for a Lua doesn't have to be the best ball in the world. It's just 40 yards of green grass, hitting in there, win the race. And it's the brilliant thing about Drogheda is they will say, we'll stand on the edge of our 18-yard box, you come up to the halfway line, and at some point we're going to nick it, and we're going straight in behind there. And it, oppositions can see it happening, but if they don't want to come up the pitch and they stay a little bit loose in their own half, then you pop the ball into midfield and they have runners from there as well. So I love how Drogheda go about it. They do the complete opposite of what the opposition want. So yeah, I really like it. I expect Drogheda to get the win tonight, but I think Dundalk, I mean, Owen Kenny is somebody I've been impressed with. His goal against Derry the other day with that left foot and strike was lovely. I think Keith Buckley will be a good signing. Yeah. I don't expect him to play every minute of every game, but just the standards, similar to James McLean going into Derry, his standards in the dressing room will be a big thing. And Daryl Horgan still has a bit about him. Yeah. Obviously looking after his body really well, still chopping and changing out in that wing. So yeah, I think it'll be a good game, but I fancy Drogheda to get the win there in my old club, and it'd be nice because the last time we played at Oriel Park for Drogheda, we got pumped 5-0.
Really? That was the peak Dundalk.
I think that was Stephen Kenny and Vinnie Peart. It was a really, really good. It was Shields in the middle as well. Me and Shields were kicking lumps out of each other. Yeah, it was a difficult game that we got absolutely battered in.
I'm just fascinated to watch Kieran Kilduff's journey as well as a manager, because he's only 37 years of age, like, and already a bit of experience, obviously, with the wasn't that Athlone Town in the women's game if you continue on that trajectory, obviously we'll see where he goes, but to be managing at that in Premier Division level at 37 years of age, no mean feat. Like,
yeah, and the fact that the off season previously didn't know we were getting a license, and going out and signing experienced players takes a lot. He didn't just say, right, we'll try get young lads in and try to do it. You know, we went out and got experienced players, the matches younger players, you know, Cornwell coming in as well, Wilson coming in. So I'd say they have good ambition to stay in the league this year and hopefully do well in the cup and then build again the next year. But he's done extremely well, I think, with the team that he's had over the last couple of years.
Shelburne hosting Galway United as well at Talca Park. So new stand heading towards being reopened in this one as well. So there's a lot of off-pitch stuff happening for a lot of these teams. But should be a close game. Like, I feel like in recent years, Shell's Galway United is always a close game. Mm-hmm. There's something about playing Galway United. They obviously have a certain style of play that ensures games are going
to
be tight.
And you're talking about Derry being the closest challengers to Rovers. I think Shell's are going to be the closest challengers to Rovers this year. You know, I like the amount of players that they brought in, good players that they brought in. And also, Joey's done a fantastic job since he's gone in there and has a real settled, experienced team as well. But you look against Galway tonight at home, I think I'd expect them to turn Galway over and get the 3 points on the board and kickstart that season again. One of the games called off, you don't know how they are, how they're, you know, match fitness wise after getting the match called off and getting a draw in the first game. But I really like them. I said McElroy in the midfield and Jarvis signing back, and you know, Ledwich, Barrett, Casey, they've good players there. So I'd expect them to be going close to Rovers this year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Henry Francis. Stephen Doyle keeps raving about him, right? Keeps saying, Keith, watch this guy. He's going to be unbelievable this season. So I'm really looking forward to watching him. From a Galway point of view, I still think it's the same old problems. Defensively, they'll be really dogged. They won't concede too many goals. But Lomboto, Walsh, Horley, Jimmy Keohane, I'm not sure there's enough goals in that team. And look, that's been a problem for the last couple of years. They had an XG of 2.49 against Drogheda and didn't score a goal. You know, they need to score goals, especially. I think they'll keep a fair number of clean sheets this season, but they need to score. I'm not sure Lomboto and Walsh in particular have enough goals to keep them in the league. Horley will chip in, as will Keohane, but somebody's got to get near 10 between Lomboto and Walsh, and I'm not so sure I've seen that happening. But, you know, if they defend really, really well, they'll be okay. But, yeah, I worry about their goals, to be honest.
It's a tough playing against a team like Galway, like, you know, who you know are dogged, you know are physical, they're going to knuckle down early in a game. Like, presumably you're coming up against a team like Galway, you're saying in the dressing room, lads, if we can get a goal here in the first 15, 20 minutes, you'd really upset Galway's plans and force Galway to play a little bit.
I think you have to get the force goal.
Yeah.
If Galway go 1-0 up, then it's hard to break them down, because, like Keith said, they're dogged, but you get everyone behind the ball. And now, when you're playing against teams like that, you're the team that have to get that first goal to entice them out then to try, you know, come at you and try to get the equaliser. And that leaves more space, more gaps then for your quality players to get in behind. Galway like that will, you know, if you think of the draw of the game where they missed the penalty, maybe coursing that, as I say, a lot of chances in the game, and then lose to a long throw, which you wouldn't expect from Galway to lose out on a long throw into the box. You normally expect them to deal with those set pieces. But yeah, I think as Keith is right, he's pointed out that there doesn't seem to be enough goals in it. The might draw a lot of games, but there doesn't seem to be enough goals in it to go and win those games. Like, and they'd be down the end battling it out, I think, with Sligo Waterford this year. Like,
hey, that's one of the best things about the league. I know I'm saying I fancy Rovers, you're saying Shelbourne, some people fancy Derry. I think when you look down the bottom, Sligo, Galway, Waterford, Dundalk, Drogheda are all thinking we could be in that relegation playoff.
Yeah.
So
there's
five teams looking over their shoulder. So both ends of the league, I think, are going to be really dramatic this season.
The other game, the RSC tonight, is also really interesting. Like, obviously, Sligo heading down to play Waterford, and Sligo would be looking to really bounce back. So, four goals conceded last week, obviously, and no shot on target against Bohemians, which is another concern as well.
There was no energy even there in the team. Like, there was no tackles. It was Keystone Cops defending from the first minute. You know, they trying to clear balls and they're hitting them off each other, and there was just no intensity. It's like if the goal went in, just deflated them completely. When the goal went in the second minute of the game, so it's still a long way to go, and you think Sligo would have got a reaction out, but it just wasn't anything there. And he played so well the week before up in Derry, you know, and they were unlucky again not to come away with a point at least from that game. But yeah, I feel for Sligo at the moment, because that's a bad rubbing last week. You know, it's a first home game of the season, big crowd, you're expecting your team to turn up and show a bit of bottle, and that didn't materialise at all for them.
I think Sligo come undone trying to have a game of football against Bowers. I thought the conditions were bad. The wind, the rain, the pitch looked a little bit bobbly. Once you concede in the opening couple of minutes, you're always going to be in trouble. But like Owen has said, I thought you were brilliant in the Brandywell the week before. They were unlucky to be beaten. But what John Russell will be thinking now, that's two games and still no points on the board. I know one performance was okay, the second wasn't good enough. So Sligo have a little bit of work to do. They're looking for somebody to be Owen Elding this season. They need somebody to get up and, you know, poke the head above the periphery and score a couple of goals. I'm not sure who that'll be, if it's Hakiki, possibly him. And it's Waterford as well. I was really disappointed with them against Drogheda. I thought with Drogheda playing the back five, they'd no wit in their team whatsoever. They kept forcing the ball through the middle, which is what the five at the back of Drogheda would have wanted. So kept doing exactly what Drogheda wanted. And look, if you got Paul Jarmond in your team, you just get him the ball by hook or by crook, and you just lump the thing in there. Cause
deliver, don't you? Just deliver across.
The amount of highlights I've seen of him putting, like, scoring headers, like balls in to the edge of the 18 yard box, and he's scoring from there with headers, you're thinking, he's no right to score. So why overcomplicate it? Put the ball into the box and get. If you keep putting it in, eventually the right back will come out and engage, or the left back will come out and engage. Now the hole's starting to appear, but. Yeah, they seemed really one-dimensional, but I'm sure, as John Daly would say, it's just teething problems, given it's so early in the season.
And I think on Sligo as well, losing Pat McLennan, you know, last year, like having him, I was talking to John Russell last year, and when they were conceding a lot of goals, they got Pat in, and they end up Shorten are up at the back, but now they've lost him again. He's gone to Derry.
Yeah.
So they've losing that experience again, and they're starting again trying to get the back four, back five together. And as Keith said, I think sometimes they do overplay. They've shown that last year where they were overplaying in silly areas and they weren't getting punished for it. Again, it happens again. Like, you know, teams know how to press them. And once they get the ball back, then they're literally on top of the goal, ready to put it in the back of the net. So they really need to play to the strengths sometimes. You know, sometimes you need to turn teams for the first few minutes and see how you fare out. Sometimes you can play, it'll open up, it'll develop for them. But yeah, I fear for Sligo this year.
It's funny, some managers come out after really poor performance and they play it down a little bit. They know the quotes are going to be picked up in media and they don't want to unnerve the players so early in the season. But John Russell was very critical of his players.
I think he has to get a reaction out of them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it wasn't as if they conceded in the last 10 minutes of the game and he said, right, we've done well, but we're like, from a minute ago, they were on the back foot and they were the home team. Didn't look like they were the home team. And he said, didn't play the conditions, pitch bobbly, bouncy at times, you know, rain and everything. But normally it is like that up in Sligo where the weather's not great.
Mm.
So they should have known from the get-go to try to throw balls and get at them a bit.
To be fair, the first goal they conceded, it wasn't like a pot shot from 30 yards out where you're thinking there wasn't a lot we could do. Douglas James Taylor goes in, Sargent makes a save, then it comes out and I think it's Rooney ends up bundling it into the back of the net and you're thinking they had a couple of swipes of the ball there to try and get rid of it. And defensively, I'm not sure about Sligo. I'm sure John Russell will try and invent something and get them defending that little bit better. But yeah, I think they might struggle. It's so early in the season, like in the middle of February, late February, you're going to have to play the conditions an awful lot. And sometimes a game of football is not conducive to the conditions. You just have to be a little bit more pragmatic. And it always annoyed me that you're thinking a team goes and nicks the ball off you in your own third and then you go and score, because I feel like you don't have to work for them, especially on a bad night. Mm-hmm. Make them break you down. And the Sligo don't generally do that. They were gifting the opposition an awful lot of chances.
Yeah.
And like that, the first few games of the season is just about getting points on the board.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how you play, your shape, it's about getting the points on the board, and then your football style will come into play after the first five games of the season.
Yeah.
And you'll see teams start dictating then how they are, because they have the points on the board and they're not relegation saying, oh, what do we do now? Our managers will overthink when they're down the bottom. Well, we better stop doing our playing our football, you know. We'll get the points on the board first and foremost.
Trotter are already 6 points ahead of Sligo.
Yeah.
And I know Trotter might be going for Europe, I know that, but the underlying message is stay out of that 10th and 9th place, and like I say, Trotter 6 points on the board.
Yeah. Quick fire predictions, lads, for these games. Derry Bows.
I think Bows are going to win there.
Keith?
I think an ugly win for Derry.
An ugly win. Yeah. Win's a win. Shells, Galway United.
Shells.
Both Shells. Bit of a pause from Keith.
Yeah.
I was thinking they might nick a draw, but no, I think Shells will do enough.
Yeah. Mm. Waterford, Sligo.
I go with Waterford.
Mm.
Do you know what? I go for Sligo. Why not?
Okay, go for it. Way win. Dundalk, Drogheda United.
Draw.
Drogs.
Draw and Drogs.
Mm.
And Shamrock Rovers, Pats.
I think Rovers will probably nick it.
Right. Be careful, Keith, here.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for.
Yeah, he'll sit on the fence here. No, draw.
My heart is bringing me one way and my head's going the other. Shamrock Rovers.
Okay. Just to mention before we finish as well, the Drogheda United situation, obviously there's Joanna Byrne's position and then there's Travella's position and there's the Sullivan and Lamb position. There's all statements coming out across the week. It's just a messy, messy situation. It's a distraction of the football club too.
Absolutely,
and all this,
especially considering that they've won two games and you know, they're top of the table, and you're allowed to have your own political views. You know, people mightn't agree with you, and that's the beauty of politics. You know, and
she's the party spokesperson on sport, so
exactly.
Like,
yeah, and she came out and she had her view, and she's entitled to the view. And well, as I say, you don't have to agree with her view. You don't have to back her on it. You can just say, well, that's Joanna's point of view, and that's what she believes in. And you know, a lot of people around the country probably believe in those views. So I think the club should have just come out and said, yeah, that's her views, and you know, they're not theirs if that's what they wanted to say. But I don't think this thing of a step down or anything should be even brought into the equation. You know, it should be allow her to have her say. And you know, as you say, she's Sinn Féin, you know, and she's a sportsman, she is a political person, so let her have a say. But we see it even with the Ireland situation at the moment, you know, about playing Israel. Like, they come out straight away after saying that Israel shouldn't be in the competitions. They come out straight away as the draw is done and say, you know, we're going to play the game. Instead of thinking, saying, well, you know what, we'll go to the board, we'll discuss our options. And then even if the government came out after that and said, well, we're going to back the FEI, what they decide to do. And if they lose out on money, we'll financially help them, then at least it gives people time to think and not just jump straight away to go on and say, oh, we're going to play the game. It shouldn't be played, and we all know it shouldn't be played, but come and think about the game before you come out with a decision like that straight away. You know, but politics and football, people say it shouldn't be there, but it just is. It is.
Mm. Yeah.
But let's, you know, we want to talk about the game. Like, some fans just want to go to the match, watch the match, and then go home after. Mm. They don't want to be listening to politics either. Like, you know, they just want to go down and watch the game and see it and then enjoy the game and just go home. So,
it looks like our home game is going to be in Hungary as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Which...
it's a bit of a mess, mental, the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, like, we're being punished. Yeah. Like, we would have 50,000 people in the Aviva screaming us on against Israel, but I would highly doubt there's going to be 50,000 Irish people going to Hungary for that game.
Yeah. Which, I wonder, will there be fans allowed? Presumably there will be fans allowed, but the security would have to be serious.
It has to be serious. And, like, everybody should just say no. Look, money shouldn't come into the equation.
No, at all. Not at all.
You know, it shouldn't come into it. They should be just told, the FAI should just make a decision, say, look, we'll take the consequences. Whatever's thrown at us, you know, we'll take the consequences. And that'll set a precedent then for other countries might say, well, you know what, we're going to back what Ireland are doing. You know, you can't come out and talk the talk and say Israel shouldn't be in the competition and then don't walk the walk after it. You know, and that's what the FAI have done here. And, you know, they're putting the onus is then on the players. You know, do the players go and play it? And it shouldn't be even in their hands. It should be taken out of their hands, and the FAI should just make a brave decision.
Yeah. The story's not going to go away for the next number of months, in fairness.
But honestly, I think that's mental, that we've got to the doors of the players to see what they want to do. Yeah. Like, UEFA have stood back, the FAI, the Irish government, the stuff stepped back, and everybody's gone, tell you what, we'll ask the players now. That's mental. Somebody has to make the right decision here, and it just seems like everybody's standing back and thinking, well, somebody will make it, but it's not been made yet.
The players come out and say, well, we're not going to play. What did the FAI do then?
Yeah.
What happens? Like, did the FAI go, oh, you just have to play, you're never going to play for Ireland again, or, you know, we'll pick other players to play? It's, you know, just take the decision out of everyone's hands.
Exactly.
But we need to know what the sanctions are going to be. If it's going to be financial, then it's financial. Are they going to implement the Irish clubs in Europe? We don't know. Are we going to still be allowed to be a part of the Euro 2028? Are UEFA going to punish us in that regard? There's all sorts of variables here. We all know the right answer to this question, but there's so many other questions that prop up thinking, well, what's the punishment?
Yeah.
Which is crazy that we might be getting punished in this situation, but politics and football, it's crazy. And I think it was I'm not sure of the exact year, but Ukraine got invaded by Russia, then Russia were due to play Poland decided we're not going to play Russia, and I think it was whoever Russia were supposed to get in the next round also said, well, we're not playing them either.
And then
all of a sudden UEFA said, okay, then we'll ban Russia.
Strength the numbers.
I think it feels we're on the cusp of that again.
It takes one country to stand up and to say we're not playing it.
I thought Richard Sadlier was brilliant on RTE the other day. He said it feels like UEFA are waiting for Ireland to step out of line and make us the scapegoat and all this, to say you just want to step out of line, this what happened to us. But if we can get the Austrian FA and the Kosovo SA on board, maybe the strength and numbers there. But we all know the answer to this question.
Yeah, see what happens over the next while. Owen, thanks many for coming in this morning.
Appreciate it.
As always, Owen here with us on Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast with myself and Keith.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.